ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धधामि भगवद्गीते भगवद्वैषिणी. Chapter 7, verse 28. Janānāṁ puṇya karmanāṁ, janānāṁ puṇya karmanāṁ, te dvandva moha nirmuktāha, te dvandva moha nirmuktāha, bhajante mām vṛdha vṛdhāha, bhajante mām vṛdha vṛdhāha. Yeshāṁ tu antagatam, antagatam, tu antagatam, pāpam, Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmuktaha Bhajante Mam Dridha Vrataha. Now we're going with in verse 26, Krishna said to Arjuna, "Hey Arjuna, I know all of the beings that have gone before, all beings that have gone before, all that are here now, and all that will be here in the future. But none of them know me. I know them, but they don't know me." And Krishna and Shankar says in his bhasha, "Except for the jnanis." Except for those who have sought me, the mumukshus, who have come to know me, for the regular samsari, they don't know me, right? Because all the sense organs, they're within the boss, and all the sense organs are going out. And that being the case, they also become, from the next verse, totally deluded by the dvandvas, by the opposites that really give rise to all of the raga dvesha, all of the likes and dislikes. And those raga dveshas, those likes and dislikes, are what cause the sukha and the dukkha. And that sukha and dukkha, the pleasure pain, I seek this so that I can be happy, right? I want this so that I can be happy. I don't want this. I don't want this so that I can be happy. I veer away from my objects of dislike because they cause dukkha. And I go toward objects of like because they cause sukha. And so because of that, what happens is that the whole universe really breaks up into my likes and dislikes and all of the neutral things we don't bother about. There's really, most 99% of the universe is neutral. In other words, its presence or absence is totally insignificant to you. It can come and go, nothing happens to you at all. You are a vairagi, you're a sannyasi. You're a sannyasi toward most everything in the creation. But within your world, within your little enclave of experience, you know, your what circles around you, from the closest, from that which is closest to a little bit farther away to a little farther away, all of those things you are more likely to be in relationship with. And in the relationship, there can be always sukha and dukkha. This is going the way I like, as opposed to this is not going the way I like. The things that are going my way give me sukha. The things that are not going my way give me dukkha. So the whole world really breaks up into raga and dvesha, which causes angst for me. Right? If the world is responsible for my raga dvesha, if the world is responsible to me because of my delusion, this is the great moha, in fact. The world is responsible for my well-being, for my ananda. Then I am at the mercy of the world. that I have to manipulate, I always have to be manipulating the world to try to keep it on my side. I have to manipulate what's going on in the world in order to maintain some balance of sukha, some amount of happiness. And so that becomes my preoccupation. That, in fact, is what I do in the world. Right? And so this keeps me tied, in fact. This need for sukha, gaining sukha from the world, keeps me tied, you know, keeps me hooked into the world. And so for such a person, he says, the people who are, when a person is tied into the world from for my ananda, for my happiness, and he says, and this moha, this delusion takes place, it takes place in the creation before you've been born. For every birth that you've had, it's not like you have a prior condition where this was not the case. This comes along with the creation because you're born inside of the creation. And being born inside of the creation, you're looking out. And when you're looking out through your sense organs, sometimes you're feeling happy, sometimes you're feeling sad. And what do? I equate the situation with my experience of happiness or sadness. So therefore, then I blame the situation for it. This situation is responsible for my sadness. This situation is responsible for my happiness because there's a relationship there. I'm happy, this is the situation. I'm sad, this is the situation. This I develop a dvesha, a dislike for. This I develop a like for. And so that is, I'm enmeshed now. I'm enmeshed now because it's not all right for me not to be happy. And so this search, this innate desire to be happy, and that happiness being associated with the conditions in the world, I become susceptible to, because of my raga dvesha, I become susceptible to a dharma, to papa karmas, because I need this to be happy. That's the whole problem. I need this to be happy. If somebody or some situation is thwarting my fulfillment of that desire, that person becomes an object of my annoyance, anger, dislike, hatred. And depending upon the desperation of my need for that object of desire, I can act out in one way or another against this person or situation. And so a dharma is easily born. It's hard to be good, to be both an ajnani and good. Because if I'm an ajnani, this superimposition is going to take place. And when this superimposition takes place, then I'm going to have to sacrifice my happiness, you know, my happiness for the sake of dharma. That act requires some maturity. Right? For me to sacrifice my happiness for the sake of dharma requires a realization on the part of the mumukshu, and on the part of the seeker, and part of the samsari. It requires that realization that the ananda I achieve through the practice of dharma, from choosing to do what is right over choosing to do what I like. If the two go together, that's fine, but making the choice to do what is right over what I want, I come to the realization at some point in my maturity that that is a greater ananda. That gives me a greater, a deeper ananda. And so then the commitment becomes to dharma, doing what is right, as opposed to doing what I want. Right? And I gain more shanti that way. As I start to understand that, these papa karmas, the actions that are born of a dharma, or born of, let me have what I want so that I can be happy, regardless of dharma, a dharma. That type of papa karma begins to fall off. And the punya karmas replace it. So here what he says from this verse, where when Bhagavan says, I know all beings before, in the past, present, and future, but they do not know me. right? The connection that Shankara gives to this next verse that I just talked about. So what is the Paribandhaka? What stops a person from knowing me or even having the mumukshutvam or the becoming a jignyasu, one who desires to know me? What is it that gets in the way? And he says, what gets in the way is this grand moha, this great delusion that comes along with the creation itself. In other words, you're born with it. That brings about the delusion of these opposites that rise because of the raga and dvesha. The delusion that's really born of this raga and dvesha. That keeps people from wanting to know me because they want to gain that. Instead of wanting to gain me, the ananda is superimposed on some object in the world and they want to gain that. In the end, and from the beginning, middle, and end, we are after ananda. We seek ananda. Even the jignyasu, the jnani, seek ananda. It's just for the jignyasu and the ananda, the search is over. For the jignyasu, the search is there, but let me put it this way, I misspoke. For the jignyasu, the search is on still for that completion, but the refuge that person has taken is in Ishwara, as we'll see in the next verse. They've taken refuge in Ishwara and the Lord for that wholeness, for that ananda. The jnani is no longer searching for the ananda because recognizes that they've found it. So the samsari is searching out here. The jignyasu, the mumukshu, is searching, is resorted to Ishwara, and the jnani is abiding in it. But that is what Swamiji sometimes calls the ananda, the gasoline. That's what keeps the jiva going in samsara. The gasoline behind our pursuits. We do things, everything we do is for the sake of my ananda. Everything the mumukshu does, the jignyasu does, for the sake of my ananda. Everything the upasaka does, for ananda. Everything the dharmanishta, the one who follows dharma, for ananda. Everything really is a namaskar. It's a full pranam to ananda. It's a full pranam to the self. But it's the self veiled in ignorance which causes so much projection, so much adhyasa, so much superimposition. But wherever the self is superimposed to that self, I give a full pranam. And I do everything to remove the obstructions. So in a way, it's very beautiful if you understand that the whole world, the entire world, with all of the problems and all of the craziness, all of the dharma, all of the wrong acts. But if you look at it, really, all the wrong acts, pushing this person away, killing this person off, doing this, doing that, all of it is for the sake, it's a full pranam to the ananda, to the self. But the self is superimposed on an ism of some sort, or on a being of some sort, an object of some sort. But there's a full pranam there, and that full pranam is to Ishwara, is to the self, is to the Atma, is to ananda. And so the problem is one of ignorance, and the ignorance can get very dark. Very askewed, can cause a very askewed perception of reality, like perception of the creation, a perception of what is good for me. But there's something pure in it, and the purity is in the what is good for me is what? Ananda. My wholeness, my fullness, my happiness, because that is that's the truth of it. And that is what is good for you. It's only when you project it on something that's bad for you, then there's a big problem that happens there. So this moha, this icha dvesha, desire and hatred, right? My wants, what I pursue and what I hate. All this is the moha, or this is the dwandva, the duality that born of this icha and dvesha, that causes so much suffering and so much pain. Even for a dharmanishta, to the degree that the ananda is projected onto the world, to that degree we suffer. Wherever there's any dvaita at all, to that degree we suffer. Because whatever If the projection is on something within duality, as wonderful as it may be, it is still separate from me. It's still subject to change. It's still subject to death. You know? But there's just, if you're a dharmanishtha and your world is ruled by a devotion to dharma, you know, there's a shanti holding the pain. With dharma, there's shanti holding the pain. Pain is still there because birth and death and change are there. So anyway, so what he says now is, okay, so this grand sammoha, this complete delusion born of these dwandas, when this is acts as the pratibandhaka, that's the pratibandhaka for keeping someone away from me, Krishna says. But then he says now in this verse 28, yesham, for whom to, but however, now differentiating from those people, whereas for whom the antigatam papam, for whom the papa, the adharma, the papa, has antigatam, has come to an end. For those for whom the papa has come to an end, means they're not performing papa anymore, adharma anymore. For the jananam, who are those people? Jananam punya karmanam. It's okay. It's okay. There's stuff back there for you. What?
Music tips.
Should be alright. That door's not. That door's in
there. It's open.
Okay. It'll be okay. You're gone. Okay. Jananam punya karmanam. For those people who do karma, the punya karmas are from punya karma, the people who do from karman, the people who do punya, who perform punya, they do the punya karmas. I'll unfold this in a minute, but let's look at the verse. Those people for whom the papa karmas have come to an end, they no longer do the papa karmas. Those people who now are punya karmas, they do people who do punya karma. Te dvandva moha nirmuktaha. Those people are free from, nirmukta means completely free from, the delusion, the moha caused by the dvandvas of icha dvesha. The dvandvas of pursuing my likes and dislikes. The dvandvas caused by my likes and dislikes. This makes me happy, this makes me unhappy. Those people who are free from the delusion of these dvandvas, bhajante mam dridhavrataha. They are dridhavrataha. They are people who have a vrata means their commitment is firm. Dridha means firm. Those people who have a firm commitment, bhajante mam. Those people freed from this delusion of the dvandvas, they bhajante mam. They seek me. They worship me. They seek me. Either way, you can say they worship me, they seek me, they gain me. Here Swamiji takes it as they seek me. Okay. So here he says, every human being starts out deluded by the dvandvas. Dvandvas means these opposites. There's no getting around it. To the degree that you take your ananda to be produced by the world, by your relationship with the world, to that degree, that moha is there, and you're going to be born into that because you're sent, because of what I explained before. Because of that, I will fall into one dharma or another. I'm not always going to be doing perfect, behaving perfectly. Even my anger, my cruelty to others, my meanness, there's so many things where we have so many limitations in our behavior. I gossip, all of these types of things that we have to work on. You know, not gossiping, not talking about somebody behind their back, all of these silly, silly things that make me feel horrible if I do it. Y'all do them. They make you feel horrible if you do it. And guilty, and worried. All kinds of, these are all little adharmas, you know, that build up. Those tendencies, you know, those tendencies create what we call samskaras, grooves in your brain, right? Ways of behavior, like if you're short-tempered, for instance, you're used to snapping at people if you don't get your way, if you say you're short-tempered or you're critical, you're used to being critical, your mind develops some, what we call some scars, tendencies toward that kind of behavior, you know? If you're mopey, tendencies toward moping, complaining, tendencies toward complaining about everything. You just get, your mind gets into these groups. And those are called samskaras. How do you change these groups? Because unless you consciously bring in some will to redirect the way that your mind is thinking, it just goes in that direction. So initially it takes some commitment, right, to change the grooves. Swamiji uses he's an example. Let me think if I can think of it. I liked it. Oh, he used this example in his bhasha. It's nice. He said, say you grow up in a household where they swear all the time, you know, say cursing all of the time. And so you decide at one point that, you know, you don't want to speak like that. You don't want to be using swear words all of the time. You want to get rid of that habit. It's a habit, and you grew up with it. Right? You decide, I'm going to stop that. Well, initially, to stop yourself from using those words which you've habituated yourself to, it requires a discipline. It requires almost like an auto-suggestion where you have to catch yourself. You have to catch yourself. It's a discipline and say no. You know? But after you've practiced that discipline for some time, you've created a new set of samskaras, and so the mind no longer goes in that direction. You know, swearing is no longer part of your way of conversing. And so now, after some time, these new samskaras are what is natural for you, and this papakarma, we'll call it a papakarma, this example he's using it for is papakarma, just simply drops off. It no longer takes discipline, right? So you've broken that particular habit. How do you break these habits of these papa karmas? By doing punya karmas. The punya karmas negate the papa karmas. They create what was called, there's two things happen. When you're doing the punya karma, it creates an adrishta, an unseen result. One of the unseen results is the new samskaras that they bring about for the mind to follow. So that in time, the punya karmas negate the papa karmas. But the papa karmas that are habitual to you, you have to become conscious of and desire to change. If they don't, you're falling in the same rut all the time. And so, here he says, for those people for whom the papa karmas have come to an end. Who are those people? The people who have done the punya karmas. How do the papa karmas come to an end? How do those samskaras come to an end? By doing the punya karmas. In other words, you recognize that particular karma, that particular behavior, is a papa karma. It's, what is papa karma? It's something that causes pain for myself and others. It's very simple. It produces pain, produces a negative situation, a painful situation. That's the papa karma. A punya karma creates shanti. It's a nice way to kind of understand, you know. And so whenever I have a tendency to do something that creates pain for myself or for another, the more I become conscious, and I make a choice not to do that, I'm taking the energy out of the papa karma and putting it into the punya karma. And so after some time, a person no longer has a tendency to do those karmas. The tendency is to do the punya karma, so you're no longer threatened by the papa karma. That's how we change, you know. But it takes some discipline. And then, in order to, well, let's put it this way: why would we choose that discipline? Discipline can be hard. Why do we make a choice to discipline ourselves against that particular, what we'll call papa karma, something that causes pain for myself or others? Why do I choose to change? Because I've recognized that it causes pain for myself and others. And I don't want the pain. That itself, though, is a huge recognition. If I recognize that to the degree that I'm willing to change, that's a huge recognition. Because papa karmas, or karmas that cause pain, are complex in that you can feel justified in maintaining the papa karma or maintaining the painful way of thinking. It's not all of that easy, to actually want to give up the whole web of thinking that justifies your painful way of thinking. Requires a lot of viveka, a lot of vairagya, a lot of giving up of a part of yourself that you're attached to. There's part of yourself, if you're caught in a papa karma, there's part of you that is attached to that papa karma. A lot of times it has to do with feeling justified. A lot of times it has to do with taking on suffering for myself, and not wanting to give that up because then others won't realize what they've done to me. I'm just trying to think of some of these complexities that can go around why I maintain, even negative self-talk or negative habits or depressed thinking or all kinds of things. What is it that, what is my attachment to it? That, what is the attachment to it that is stronger than my wanting to change it? And that's where I think in understanding that there's a dilemma there. There's somehow more of an attachment to the pain, because I think that somehow by my holding that pain, I will get some relief from it from somebody from the outside. So it's complicated, right? But one thing is we need to kind of understand the complication and work our way through it. And sometimes that we can do that through a lot of self-talk, where you talk to the part of yourself that is attached to the papa karma, the karma that is, or the way of thinking, or the way of being that is causing pain to yourself and others. If you find you can't give it up, or you don't want to give it up, or you want to kind of wallow in that painful way of thinking, that victim way of thinking. That's another word that sometimes we use, being the victim. If you don't want to give up being the victim, to change into another mode of thinking, then that requires some type of dialogue between yourself, the adult you, and the person who feels so hurt. So all of this stuff has to be teased out, because the samskaras, the tendencies are very, very deep. It can be very deep. Some are easy. The ones that are easy are the ones that I no longer have a value for. But to get to that place where you no longer have a value for some of them, it's not that easy. Right? If you don't have a value for a behavior, you're ready to let it go. And then you initiate a new behavior. The new behavior erases the old behavior. The punya karma erases the papa karma. But what about those karmas or those ways of being that I am attached to? Then it requires a little bit more work. It requires some distance. It requires some viveka. It requires some talking to that part of yourself that's attached to that particular papa karma. And then replacing that as they occur with another way of thinking. I like Swamiji's example of the swear word because it is very simple. It simplifies everything. Another one is, quitting smoking. It's an obvious one. People who smoke, everybody who smokes wants to quit. But they also like to smoke. They want to quit. They really want to quit, but they really like to smoke. It's a dilemma. At some point, the value for not smoking, the ananda, the happiness, the fullness I would get from not smoking, is greater than the happiness and the pleasure that I get from smoking. It's a dilemma. We don't always cross over from the papa karma to the punya karma just like that. It requires some maturity. Is it like some people will say it's like hitting bottom. You have to hit bottom in terms of your smoking. You have to hit bottom in terms of anything that you're attached to, that you're very attached to, you know, and at the same time it's not good for you, you know. And even in your behavior in the world, your social behavior, how are you with people that you have to work with, you know. Do you get along with them or not? Do you irritate them? Do you make them feel? Do you get annoyed with them? Does your presence in the group contribute to the happiness of the other members of the group? Or do you find that your presence creates stress among the other members of the group? It's all subtle, you know? Subtle. But you start to notice it, you know. You start to notice these things. And then the question is, when does it become something worthy of my changing? Because subtly I create stress in the group. You know? When do I take responsibility for that and think, well, maybe it's me? And then I make an adjustment. That requires a kind of a sensitivity and continuing to put on ahead of everything else Dharma on the one hand, but Dharma is for the sake of my ananda and my freedom from, it's for the sake of the ananda and my freedom from this raga dvesha. It's also the essence of sannyasa. You know, the sattva karma sannyasa that the sannyasi enjoys, that sannyasa that is really what we call abhayam, that abhayam that says, let me not be afraid of any being and let no being be afraid of me. That's a huge thing. Let no being be afraid of me, and let me not be afraid of any being. Even just if you think for yourself, what it would mean for you to have that, that's a vritta, means that dritta vritta, that total commitment to that abhayam. Let no being be afraid of me. Swamiji, I know from even prior to his sannyasa days, that vow was so very real for him. I told this story before. I love the story that once he was kind of was a sannyasi and had at this time he was very very busy and had still a lot of devotees, a lot of students. But he was still pretty young. And one night he was in bed in the middle of the night, about 2:30 in the morning. One of his students or devotees called in the middle of the night. The devotee was very worried about something. Something had happened and he couldn't sleep and he was so worried. And so he just thought, let me call Swamiji. And so he called Swamiji, you know, 2:30 in the morning. So I was, yes. Yeah. And so the devotee told Swamiji just right away all the problem, everything was how worried it was, and Swamiji talked to him about it and they kind of worked it out, and then the conversation ended and Swamiji hung up and started to go back to sleep. And he said, Swamiji said he realized then, he said he felt so happy. He felt so happy that person felt free enough to call him in the middle of the night. That's really abhayam. You know, he didn't have any. The devotee didn't worry about disturbing Swamiji. You know, that's how Swamiji saw it. You know, he needed Swamiji's help, and he called even though it was 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, and Swamiji thought he felt so happy because this is abhayam. You know. And I see that too. I mean that is really a beautiful thing. Whether it was okay for that devotee to call at 2 or 3 in the morning, that's another issue. Actually, it was. Maybe it was a very serious thing. But he was able to do that because there was no fear there. And so if you contemplate on, like, for me that's an important story. Because it makes me understand something. You know, about what abhayam means. It means you are not a threat to others. Now, I don't feel like I'm there at all. I feel like I am maturing to that. I'm maturing into that because I have that as a value. Because I understand what it is. You know? That is really the sannyasa. That's really antakarana shuddhi. It doesn't mean... Sometimes Swamiji has called himself the screwless screw. Somebody is, if you're worried about somebody trying to take advantage of you or trying to, you know, get one over on you and all of this, it's not about not handling situations, but it's about abhayam, not creating fear. So anyway, I like that. So here he says that those people that have this vridhavrataha really means the papa karmas have fallen off, right? They naturally do the punya karma. Because of naturally doing the punya karma, there's the shanti, natural shanti born of dharma, that really allows for a person to seek me. That is mam bhajante, to seek me. That to have that firm commitment. Because no longer running after raga dvesha. So the firm commitment to me and those people, freed from the moha, the dvandas, they're able to seek me. Okay? So then he says, and then the Shankara introduces this next verse, why? Why do they seek me? What for? What's the purpose? Jara marana mokshaya mama shritya yatantiye te brahma tadvidukrishnam adhyatmam karma chakilam jara marana mokshaya mam ashritya yatantiye te brahmatadvidhu krishnam adhyatmam karmacha akilam. Says jara, old age, marana, death, jara marana mokshaya, for liberation from death and old age. Mam ashritya, having taken complete refuge in me, mam ashritya, having taken refuge in me, Ishwara, yatanti me, they strive, those who strive for liberation from old age and death, having taken refuge in me, mam ashritya, they brahma tad vidhu krishnam adhyatman. They know that Brahman, that self which is infinite, which is myself, Krishna says, which is my own being, Brahman, that infinite self. They know that infinite self to be what? Krishnam adhyatman, to be myself alone. Krishnam means holy. They know completely holy that this adhyatma, that Brahman, which is Krishna, which is the self of the Lord, that Brahman is my very being. they know that. Krishnam completely. And what else? Karmacha Akilam. And they know karma in its entirety. So, those people who seeking liberation from old age and death, means seeking liberation from birth and death, from change, from the whole samsara, seeking that liberation, having resorted now to me, Mam Ashrutya. Mam Ashrutya, having resorted to me, means taking to Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. Means they're now committed to me, to knowing me, to understanding me, to gaining this knowledge of me fully. Those people, so Mam Ashrutya, being totally committed to gaining this knowledge of me, they strive for moksha. Moksha from samsara, from old age and death. Those people who have taken to me completely, Mam Ashrutya, that taking refuge in me means what? Means Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, wanting to, where I become primary. I take refuge in the Lord means the Lord becomes primary to me. And what does that mean in terms of what I do? I do Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. My pursuit now is toward knowing Bhagavan, understanding the Lord, gaining this knowledge. So Mam Ashrutya, resorting to me fully, they strive for this for liberation. And those who do this, then what happens for them? They then know that Brahman, that which is Brahman, they know that which is Brahman, to be Adhyatman, centered on the very self. In what form I am that Brahman, I wholly, completely, there is no part of me that is not Brahman. I am Brahman, I'm not part of Brahman, I'm not like Brahman, I am Brahman. I am the very self of Krishna. I say, the Lord Krishna, I am the self of Krishna. I am the self of, and we'll see in this next verse, I am the self of all the devatas. I am the self of the whole creation. But first I recognize that Brahman, the very self, which is the self of Krishna, is myself. And all of the karma, all of the rituals, all of the karmas, all of the actions, both the karta, the doer, and the karma, the doer, the karma, and all the doer doing and the karma and the action itself, all of them are only Ishvara. I understand that I am both the karta and the karma, and the doer and the karma. The karta and karma, both, not just one. I'm the doer and I am the doer and the karma is something else. No, both the doer and the karma and the done, the doer and the action both, our karma, that are one Ishvara. That I understand completely. That all action, all activity is Ishvara, the actor and the active. So that is completely clear. So the kartritvam is given up. I recognize the kartritvam, the doership is given over to Ishvara. And then he says, Sadi Bhutadi Daivamam, Sadi Bhutadi Daivamam. Sadhyajnyanchayedhidhu Prayanakale pichamam Tevadur yukta chetasaha Sadhi bhuta adidaivam mam Sadhi yajnyam Sadhyajnam cha ye viduhu Prayana kale api cha mam Te vidur viduhu Yukta chetasaha. He says, and those ye viduhu, those who know mam, me, as being the adibhuta, adidaivam, and adiyajnam. They know me in these three words, adibhutam, adidaivam, adiyajnam. We've already done those who know me as adhyatmam. Adhyatmam means where I am centered on the self. They recognize me as being the self. Now, and those who recognize me as being the self, they recognize me also as being adibhuta. Adibhuta means all beings, or the five elements. Either way, they recognize me as Buddha in terms of all the bhutani, all of the beings. And Buddha also means the elements, so you take both ways. They recognize me as being all beings, as being the five elements. They recognize me as Ishwara, I the Atma, which is Brahman, and the self of all of the elements. I am as the Upadana Karana. I am the very substance, the Sat-Chit of all of the Bhutas, of all of the elements. And then Adidaivam, I am also the Nimitta Karanam. I am the conscious being of all the Devas, all of the Devatas, and I am also the conscious being who is the self of this creation. I am the being of this creation. I am the consciousness, the conscious self of this creation. So I'm both the Nimitta Karana, the efficient cause, and the Upadana Karana, the material cause. I am the Devata, I'm the conscious being that informs this creation, and I'm the self of all of the Devatas. And I am also the body of all of the Devatas. I'm the body of this creation. I'm the Maya Upadi, and I am the conscious being which the Maya Upadi enjoys. The Adibhuta is the Maya Upadi. The Adidaivata are all of Devatas and also the conscious being from whom this Maya Upadi manifests and resolves. So I am that, and I am also the Adiyagnam. I am also all of the rituals. Right? In the Vedas, there's all of the rituals, there's the Devatas, and then there's the body. I am the rituals, I am the Devatas, I am the karmas, the Devatas to which the karmas are, to whom the karmas are offered, and I am the whole creation itself. I am the whole. So they know me, those jnanis, those ones who know me as their very self, also know me as the whole. I am the whole creation, I am all beings in the creation, I am all the Devatas in the creation, I am all the rituals that are done to the Devatas. So it's just making in big sweeps a way of saying, by group, making these big groups, saying they know me as their very self, and they know me as the whole manifest creation in the form of all of the beings, all of the elements, all of the Devatas, all of the conscious beings, all of the Devatas in the creation, and all of the rituals also. And so for those people, prayana kale apicha, even at the time of death, mamte vidhu yukta chetasaha, those people whose mind is yukta chetasaha, means samahita chetasaha, their mind is resolved, means they're no longer hooked into this raga dvesha. They're punyakarmis. That's gone from, this tendency toward papa karma is gone for them. They have antakarna shuddhi, means their mind has a natural abiding, they have jnanam. And so for those people who are free from the raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes, you know, for those people who are yukta chetasaha, they know me even at the time of death. So that in the, kind of in the tradition or in what is common in India, that they, in India they feel that, even though Swamiji says in his Vasha there's no great logic for this, but this is the feeling, this is the tradition, and this is what's been carried on for, the understanding has been carried on forever. That is that the thought that you die with is what is, sends you on your trajectory for your next birth. So that final thought is considered to be very, very important. That's why when the person is dying, the family will sit around and chant Rama, 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 Rama. That's why they, or that's why they give you a name and your children names of the different names of the Lord, because you're attached to your child. Say you're very attached to your child, then when you're at the time of death, you might think of your child. So let's name the child Shiva. You think of Shiva, at least you're thinking of the Lord somehow, so that could help you in the trajectory, you know. But then in what Swamiji says, and what we also kind of recognize, is that at the time of death, there really is no will, or no, you know, and so you can't decide what you're going to think at that final moment. So it's the culminations of your samskaras that are there, and your attachments that will dictate that final thought.
Yeah.
Right? They say, you know, for a jnani, everything is Ishwara, and there's no question of having to remember the nature of yourself. There's no going to be no no self-forgetfulness, because once the ajnanam is removed, your being is never not there to be forgotten. It's aparoksha. You know, it's what we call svata siddha. It's self-evident. Your being is self-evident. It doesn't require a mind to remember it. It is you, and it is self-shining. And so even at the time of death, that self-shining you remains you. It never has been born. It has never died. It has never gone into any type of transition at all. It's timeless. It's nitya. It's free from time. It's free from change. And for you now as a jnani, that's the fact. For you don't, even with this body, mind, with the whole maya upadhi, with your physical body, with your mind, your sense organs, with all of the activity that these upadhis are going through, even now, yourself, which is aparoksha, which is immediately evident to you, is changeless. And no matter what your mind is doing or feeling or thinking, your being is that way. When this body drops, there's nothing, there is no ignorance there to cause you to go again into a misidentification when your own nature already is that, right? And so there's no thought of self-forgetfulness because there's no removal of yourself to forget yourself, right? And there's nothing needed to remember yourself because the ignorance has already been removed. And so even at the time of death, that recognition of me, Krishna says, my recognition of me is there. The same recognition of me that is here now, that recognition of me is there even at the time of death, because memory isn't necessary. And also, for the person who has recognized that I am the Adhyatma, that this self, that I, as Ishwara, as Brahman, am this self, that I am all of the elements, that I'm all, and that I am all of the beings, and that I'm all the devatas, that I am all the rituals, that I am the whole, there is no thought that's away from me. And so he says, for me, even at the time, for those whose mind is free of raga dvesha, is key there. For those whose mind now is free of the raga dvesha, means that mind, before that, the mind is no longer asking, may this make me happy, may I have this to be happy. It doesn't ask that anymore. It doesn't think like that anymore. And so that mind is what we call samahita chetasaha. It's a mind that is resolved because of knowledge. That mind is resolved. And so when the upadhi drops, the mind doesn't run out because of ajnanam to this attachment or that attachment. That's already gone. And so whatever the mind is thinking of, it is thinking of Ishwara. And from the standpoint of my being, the being that I am is changeless. The recognition of myself is changeless, and that recognition, that self, doesn't change. See what I mean? It's like, I am my own experience. I don't require my mind to be me. I don't require the universe to be me. And so myself, my sense of self now, is not being supported by my mind. The ignorance is gone. So I am just me. And when this whole body drops, the me that I am will still be there. Right? I don't need the mind to bolster that up, because that me is its own experience. Illuminance, that self-experience, the consciousness itself, which illumines the mind. The mind is not there, the consciousness that I am continues to be what it is. If the mind is there, then whatever the thought is in the mind becomes known. If the mind is not there, the thought isn't known. If there is a thought there, then the thought is known. If the thought isn't there, the thought's not known. But what is there is me. Okay? So I am there independent of the mind. I don't need the mind to label me. And I don't need the mind to validate me or to mirror me. Because of me, the mind itself is known. And once that ajnanam is removed that caused me to superimpose my being on different parts of the creation, right? Different objects of the creation, my mind, sense organs, physical body, etc. Once that ajnanam is removed, then I'm home free. I don't require the mind anymore to be me. And so memory, nothing is necessary. But at the time of death, And for the person who has assimilated, who has jnana nishtha, right, I already am free of this raga dvesha where I'm asking the universe to make me happy. I need this or I need this. And once that's gone, then this is Ishwara. There's nothing to stop me from appreciating this is Ishwara. That jivatvam comes with the habitual ajnanam. You know what I mean? That the identification with myself as a little jiva in the creation who needs this and that and this and that. For the jnani, the jivatvam is there, but it's mithya. It's mithya. It means that this body-mind-sense organs is there, all right. Functioning, thinking, working, all of these things are there. But there's nobody inside who's saying, I have to have this to be happy. And if somebody does say that, it's dismissed as mithya. There's nobody reacting on that. It's like they use the example of, you know, like a bird flying through the air. Bird flying through the air. It's not leaving a track. It doesn't leave any track. What does that mean? So if a thought goes through my mind, it doesn't leave a track. You know, it doesn't have a whole bunch of things hanging on to it. And so say a thought runs through my mind, I want that. It doesn't mean anything in terms of my own well-being or in terms of my own ananda. It doesn't have a force to make me run after the thing and get it. It's just a mithya. I have a choice. That's the idea. Okay, so Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Sat, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Jnana Vijnana Yoga Nama Jnana Vijnana Yoga Nama Saptamodhyayah Saptamodhyayah. Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. Om that Brahman is Sat, is the truth, is the reality. Iti thus, this seventh chapter, Saptamodhyayah, nama called the Jnana Vijnana Yoga. That's the name of this chapter, Jnana Vijnana Yoga. That yoga that has, which has yoga here, which has for subject matter, the jnana vijnana. Jnana is the paroksha jnana of Ishwara. Vijnana is the direct immediate knowledge of Ishwara. Jnana vijnana yoga nama, the seventh chapter, Saptamahadhyayaha, in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, which is considered as an Upanishad, which is a Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvada, which is a dialogue between Lord Krishna and Arjuna, which has for its subject matter Brahma Vidya, and is also a Yoga Shastra, Karma Yoga, Brahma Vidya, Karma Yoga. So, this seventh chapter now is concluded. Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
So the only thing that causes forgetfulness then is ignorance.
Ignorance and samskaras. The samskaras, you know. That's why this, what Krishna is talking about is these papa karmas that are replaced by punya karmas. There's papa karmas that are brought about by raga dvesha. That always, that's the your knowledge, assimilation of your knowledge, and then your actual work to eradicate these papa karmas. It's really, you know that book by Swamiji, Value of Values? Yeah, everybody has that, right? It's a beautiful book, because even to eradicate a bad habit, for instance, that causes pain to yourself, you have to have you have to understand it. You have to have a value, you know, to work on those, that ashuddhi in the mind that goes against your knowledge, but it can be very tenacious.
Yeah.
Some of these things in the mind are very tenacious. They don't give up easily because we have something invested in them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard to discover what's invested.
Well, yeah. One thing they say that, you know, your personality is formed by the time you're the age of 3 or something, you know, that there is that concept.
But that doesn't mean we can't change it.
Huh?
That doesn't mean we can't change it.
No, it means you can change it. But I mean, the access part of changing is, or what it is can be a mystery to the person, you know.
Yeah, that's true. There's, you know, some pre-verbal things, but there's also a lot of things we pick up along the way,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Different levels of ways of different levels that we of ways of being that causes pain.
Mm.
Yeah. Even without knowledge, even forget the knowledge.
Okay.
You know, if you weren't even a mumukshu, some ways that we are in the world and toward ourselves produce pain.
Yeah.
Even if you're not a mumukshu. And even in psychology, or, you know, people work on this. They're not mumukshus, they still work on themselves to become a mature person, to be somebody who follows Dharma, to somebody who is kind. We have all of these values, you know, kindness, generosity, to be not critical, be caring. You don't have to be a mumukshu to have these values. We have these values because they make us feel whole. It's all, these values are very self-serving. They're beautiful values, but the beautiful values are self-serving because they support my sense of well-being. You know? And we come to this knowledge with some level of maturity around these values. Some level of vairagya, some level of viveka, you know. And to the degree that we have those values are manifest in us, to that degree we don't have the problems that are there if those values aren't manifest. But with knowledge, as you gain knowledge, all of those values are sadhanas, because the opposite behavior is an expression of ignorance, where that their behavior is a natural expression of knowledge. Because your nature is ananda. If you're the truth of your nature is ananda, then you're not getting involved in all of this rabble-rousing that is caused by not being ananda. seeking ananda, needing ananda, wanting ananda, the pushing and shoving, you know, that's a result of needing to be happy. Pushing, shoving, manipulating, everything that we get into that is creates problems. If I already am the ananda, then I have a certain space, a certain objectivity to do what's appropriate in the situation. That's what's natural. Whenever you're not being held by a raga dvesha, then you have some space, you have some distance to do what is objectively meaningful in the situation. But if you're held by the raga dvesha, you don't have that space. The only thing that matters is the raga dvesha. You know? And so that's why becoming free of that, and knowledge of course helps you become free of that, because you recognize the source of the ananda as yourself, but then you have all of these habits, all of these samskaras, you know, which I need to break, to fill in that, to not fill in the groove can stay, but I have to have another route that bypasses it. I have to bypass those grooves. Because I don't have a value for them anymore.
if the habit is just very strong, how do we sort of work on bypassing those habits, even though we know they are just causing pain to ourselves and to others?
Through consciousness. It's like you know, say you grew... I like Swamiji's example. Say you grew up swearing, that's, and every other word was a swear word. That's a pretty big habit. So your brain... all the vocabulary, half of them, the words that you know are swear words. And now, so that's huge. So now you decide, I'm not going to swear anymore. But the swear words come many times, you know, say the swear words come in every 5 minutes, 10 swear words come. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it becomes kind of a big task, but you've set your mind to it. That's all. And once you set your mind to it, the mind reroutes actually rather quickly. But it has to be important to you.
Yes, it has to be important.
It has to be important. Yeah. And that's the tricky part. Because it's not always important. There's other things that are hooked into that particular tendency that are important to you. So sometimes, you know, in reference to, say, you find something about yourself that you'd like to work on or you'd like to change, you know, or that you know is causing you pain, you can ask that part, you know, what is it? What's important to you, or what are you afraid about? What would happen if we changed that? You know, or what's at stake? You might find there are things that really big things at stake. So you have to have some compassion around that too.
You might find what?
That there's things at stake, things that scare you about making that change, or worry you about it, or it's good to ask yourself about it and let that part talk to you and tell you. I mean, to compassionately ask, to really want to kind of understand what's going on. And that helps, can help to loosen it up.
Mm-hmm. That's what you said in the last class about preparation for contemplation.
Yeah.
To say, is there anybody that needs to be heard now?
Or right.
Is there anybody there that wants to talk?
Mm-hmm. You ask yourself, you're internal. Yeah, we're doing that in the Kaivalya on Sunday nights. We're going really through, you can listen online maybe to the meditation.
Well,
because I'm now decided to go really thoroughly through that whole meditative process, because there's some new people there.
Oh, okay. I haven't been able to come on Sundays.
Yeah, so you might listen to, in the Kaivalya, the last two or three meditations, because I'm going to just go thoroughly through all of this now.
Mm, okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask if it's ever appropriate to intervene with somebody else.
It depends. I mean, it can be appropriate. It depends on the situation. I mean, family members intervene. Say one family member is a drug addict or alcoholic or causing a huge problem for the rest of the family, that the rest of the family will get together and do an intervention. So sometimes it's life-saving. But it depends. What if it's somebody you don't know very well and you decide to intervene? Often not accepted. So it depends on the... It depends on your place in the relationship, you know, if it's appropriate or not. Sometimes you are the only one who can intervene.
But someone who really trusts me, who really likes me, who really respects me, spiritually, personally, everything, and I see her behaving in ways that are so destructive, not only to her own happiness, but to the group of people that she's trying to work with, and I feel like I'm in a position I might be able to point it out to her, but I don't know if that's just like so inappropriate to consider to do it.
She'd have to give you an opening of some sort, I think. Because unless she sees you as her teacher, so if you're the parent, or the teacher, they say you have a right to intervene.
She's spoken to me in that way, like, oh, I just... But I don't know if that's an opening. Because she's so dedicated to her behavior, and she considered it as something she learned as a child and that she can't escape. In spite of years of Buddhist practice, I mean years and years and years of Buddhist practice, she still considers that that's the way I am.
Well, you can look for an opening. I mean, they say, what I was saying before is, you know, the Bhaktapa says, Satyam Hitam Priyam, right? What you say should be true, but it should also be pleasing. And it should also be beneficial. That's the hitam. Satyam Hitam Priyam.
Beneficial and true.
True first, but then also pleasing.
Ooh.
And then also beneficial. Or you shouldn't talk. Satyam Hitam Priyam. Now, who can, is outside of this, they say, like a parent. It can be satyam and hitam. Should be beneficial. It should be true. They're not, it's not always pleasing. Sometimes the child, you know, doesn't really want to hear this, but the parent needs to say, not to be cruel, but the parent needs to say, you know. Sometimes the teacher also is in that position. It should be satyam, it should be hitam, it should be for their good, you know. But for others in the world, it should be satyam, hitam, priyam, because who are you?
Exactly.
Yes, who are you in the... Exactly. So who are you in the scheme of things to be offering your advice or counsel? Unless that's asked for in the relationship. For instance, for the therapist, for instance, you're asking for that, even though the therapist or the parent or the teacher doesn't want to hurt. But you're also being put into a situation where we're really looking deeply at things, you know.
And that's the contrast.
That's the contrast. That's what Swami would say, that's the contrast. Mm. Yeah. But for others, it isn't.
Right. In this situation, it's hard to live in it. There's an ulterior motive because I want the organization that we're both participating in to go more smoothly, and I see her behavior is totally disruptive to it. So it's not just for her sake. It's
That's the nature of organizations. So there's always the disruptive one. As soon as she goes, the next one. the next most disruptive one is the disruptive
one. Exactly, that's so true.
Then she'll go. That's right, you know, you should just embrace your destructive one and say, this is our destructive one, we love you. Sorry.
Yeah.
And you, that's the truth of it, because...
Yeah, thank you for that.
I suppose it also depends how much the person is sort of suffering too. If the person is sort of behaving like that, they might probably wish they were behaving like that. Maybe they're just looking for someone to sort of assist them too.
She's asking for my assistance in this.
That's what I say in those things, Joanne. I mean, sometimes there's an opening where it's natural and appropriate. So you just have to see.
Okay. Check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
I was thinking about sorrow, relation to pain, and you were saying pushing and shoving and rabble-rousing and various things we do to try to seek that sense of wholeness. But even subtler, like not letting go or trying to let go. And
yeah.
I'm thinking about it because this weekend I have 2 3-year-old twin nephews. And they're so, at that age, they're so beautiful and loving. And when it was time for me to go, they didn't want me to go. They didn't want to talk.
Yeah.
And there was a certain sorrow, that I felt there in the midst of having a really nice time with them. And it got me thinking that there's a certain amount of pain, sorrow, I guess, maybe it's inherent in the creation that isn't just the product of papa karma.
That's true.
Having to come to maturity and relationship to that. And I guess to shift so as to see it being like the whole sort of paradigm has to shift in your mind, where it's not a negative thing. It's uncomfortable, but you can kind of see the opportunity in the whole grand scheme of things. They'll grow up and they'll be fine, and not dwelling on, for example, they seem so open and free now, but what's going to happen to them over the course of the
year? Yeah, that you can leave that part out.
So the mind can start to go. I think from that point of sorrow, it can go relatively quickly towards the sort of negative thinking, rather than just kind of accepting that there's sorrow.
There's an innate sorrow to joy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Japanese word. Isn't there a Japanese word for that? There's a Japanese term for that.
Yeah. In Sanskrit, we say dukkha yoni. That sukha is a dukkha yoni. Sukha carries the womb of dukkha.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a sweet, beautiful joy you were having with your nephews, And it has to come to an end just by the nature of the creation. And so that is the natural dukkha that's there in the sukha, and that's the nature of the creation. That has nothing to do with papa. That's the nature of the creation. So that's not an adharma. That's not the type of the dukkha of adharma. That's the dukkha that makes a person a mumukshu, because there's nothing you can do about it. There's no escape.
So is this particular only in this loka here, or in other lokas? Because in other lokas,
it's less and less in the lokas up, more subtle lokas. There's less and less experience of dukkha because you have more control over your situation.
Mm-hmm. So in this particular loka, that's what it's
50-50 here.
Mm.
Yeah. We just are doing that now in the Type 3 on Saturdays. We just went through we're going through that section in the Type 3 of going up, the Gandharva Loka, the Manusha Gandharva Loka, the Deva Gandharva Loka, all the way up to then the Deva Lokas, the Karma Deva Lokas. Each one is more subtle, and there's more easy access to a stabler Ananda, because it's easier to fulfill your desires. But that's all temporary also. You come back from that.
Just amazing. The more you know, the more amazing it sort of is.
Well, so in all those lokas, there still must be a moment of suffering, because they know they're leaving.
There's that, but there's also, it can't be full Ananda, because the next loka has 100 times more.
Yeah, it's better up there.
And the next loka 100 times more. And all of the lokas are time-bound.
Mm-hmm. So they're all trapped.
That's the nature of the samsara.
Mm-hmm.
nature of creation.
Well, there's no guarantee you're going up each time.
Yeah, there's no, that's true. No guarantee. But that's not the point. The point is that for the jnani...
Well, there is for me.
All the way up, the jnani has that ananda, because the jnani, because the source of ananda is the self.
Yeah.
And so, no matter how much ananda you're able to access in the creation, from the creation through what we call vishya ananda, the ananda born of sense objects, no matter how much you can gain in the creation, the jnani already has that. Because the source...
So
all vishya ananda, all sensory ananda, the source of it is the Atman. And the jnani is already sitting in that source.
So we're not going to get any more than what we're getting now from this knowledge. I mean, that's...
There is no more.
Yeah.
There is no more. But it says, the jnani, the kshatriya, who's akamahataha, means for who is not being tortured by desire, means free from raga dvesha. So the vairagya has to be there. That's the maturity. Kshatriya Brahmanishta. That he has knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and also vairagya, also maturity. So the mind isn't now still going out, I have knowledge, but let me have this. That isn't there. So for that person, that ananda, that person enjoys, is uninhibited.
Even by mithya.
Yes, uninhibited by mithya. It's uninhibited in that, in the sense that it's, the mind is not asking. It isn't running out and searching for ananda in the world. So it's an uninhibited ananda. And in these different lokas, the ananda becomes less and less inhibited because the desires are more and more easily fulfilled. But it's still vishya ananda. Vishya means sense object. Vishya ananda. So, you know, it's still less than. It's
so
less than being the ananda itself.
If you can catch yourself thinking that your well-being or your safety is being damaged, then there's a problem by Raja at that time. Then.
Well, it means that your safety is dependent on this or the other thing,
mm-hmm.
and then that's going to be a source of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere where your being is dependent on something is a source of fear, because that, unless it's the Atma, because the Atma is not going to change, it's not going to go away, you can't hurt it. But anything in duality, if you're dependent on it, there's fear that accompanies that dependency, because it doesn't need to, it's not free of corruption, you know.
So that's where the sadhana comes in then, huh? I mean the homework.
Yeah, the bringing your knowledge to your situation. That's what we have to do. There's nothing else to do. Except go to bed.